Hello, I'm Emma Desi, and welcome to another episode of Turning Readers into Writers. If you're brand new here, welcome, and here's what you need to know. This is a community that believes you are never too old to write your first novel. No matter what you've been up to until now, if you're ready to write your book, I'm ready to help you reach the end. I focus on helping you find the time and confidence to begin your writing journey, as well as the craft and skills you need to finish the book. Each week I interview debut authors, editors and industry experts to keep you motivated, inspired and educated on all things writing, editing and publishing. If you want to catch up, head on over to emmadesi.com where you'll find a wealth of information and tools to help you get started. Before we dive in, this week's episode is brought to you by my free cheat sheet, 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write. In this guide, I give you 30 ways that you can find time to write in the small gaps that appear between the various errands and tasks and responsibilities that you have in your day-to-day life. Now, you might be thinking that you don't have any time to spare, but I can guarantee these top tips will give you writing time you didn't think you had. If you thought writing always involved a pen and paper or a keyboard, think again. If you thought you needed at least an hour at a time to write your manuscript, I help you reframe that. You won't be disappointed. Get your free copy of 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write by going to emmadesi.com/30toptips. Okay, let's dive in to today's episode. Hannah Bauman loves helping writers polish their stories and get published. She's been obsessed with stories since childhood and insisted she'd grow up to be an author. In high school, she actually enjoyed analysing assigned readings, but it was when she got to university that she discovered her true calling, editing. She majored in English with a specialisation in editing, writing and media. And following graduation, she completed a graduate level certification in editing and publishing. That led her to her current career, editing for writers. And over the past 8 years, she has honed her skills through formal education, internships, corporate editing gigs and freelance work. But for Hannah, the best thing about freelance editing is holding her clients' published books in her hands. So let's find out what she can tell us about writing emotional scenes. Let's see what tips she's got. Well, thank you, Hannah. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really pleased to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk about writing.
Yeah, a pleasure. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about you and your journey to where you are now.
Sure. So I'm Hannah Bauman. I am a book editor by day and a fiction writer by night. I started, like a lot of writers, I always had an interest in writing stories from when I was very little. And I always loved, you know, reading and fantasy books. And I would play out my fantasy books with my friends in the backyard and all of that growing up. So I think it's always been a natural path for me. I took a little deviation in high school where I thought I might want to be an astrophysicist, but I quickly learned that even though I was good at calculus, I hated it. you know, I'm sure as many people find, math is not fun. So when I got to college, I went back to my roots of writing and my interest in that. And through my coursework, I kind of stumbled into editing as a career and a skill set and just absolutely fell in love with it. So, yeah, since 2011, I've been editing in professional capacities.
Okay. So that's so a question I would have for you then, because we hear a lot about how, you know, writing a first draft is one set of skills, revising and editing is another set of skills. How do you find kind of swapping between the two? Is that, yeah, how do you do it?
Yeah, it's so funny. That's something that I still have to work on for myself. Like it's something that I have to practice daily because it's so hard. And I think I hear this a lot from clients, right? That it's so hard to go from writing to editing, or as you're writing to stop yourself from editing. It's either one problem or the other. So it's just, I have to think about, you know, your first draft is your first draft. It's supposed to be messy. That's the creative process. It does not have to be anywhere close to done. It's about getting all your ideas out, getting them on paper, kind of building the like the skeleton of your story or the foundation, you know, if you want to compare it to a house. And then editing, if we go with the house metaphor, that's like where you paint the walls and where you can, you know, decorate and things like that. Just for all my type A writers out there, just know it's a process and you can just go step by step.
Yeah. I do hear that from a number of people that just got to tweak it. Just got to tweak that as I go along. I can't move on until I fixed that bit, that one line.
Yeah. With the draft that I'm working on right now for my writing, my rule for myself is I'm allowed to self-edit it only after I write the whole chapter. And then I have to let it sit until the next day. That's how I have found my balance. If I really want to go back and edit that sentence and I need to push through the drafting. So maybe that'll help somebody.
Yeah. You get tough with yourself.
I do. Yeah. I have to set boundaries with myself.
So with your editor hat on, what kind of books do you work on with your clients? Do you have a preference at all?
Yeah. So I've pretty much specialized in fantasy, science fiction, and romance books. They're what I love to read, what I love to write, what I love to edit. So I know them like the back of my hand. But I also work on select nonfiction. That's kind of on a project by project basis. You know, part of my work as an editor and a writing coach has to do with, you know, teaching and writing nonfiction. So, you know, if I think I can help someone with a nonfiction project, I'll take it on. If I don't think so, I'll recommend them to another editor. But yeah, I mostly focus on the sci-fi, fantasy, and romance. Mm-hmm. And that's for middle grade readers through adult readers. I don't edit children's books.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And for the romance, are you, will you do any romance, erotic as well, or do you stick to?
Yep. I will do pretty much anything as long as it's, you know, all consensual in the romance. That's where I draw the line. But yeah, I've edited everything from clean through not so clean.
So sci-fi, and in particular fantasy,
they
tend to be on the bigger side. Like I write contemporary women's fiction. It's very kind of, you know, generally between 70 and 80,000 words. So it doesn't take that long for my editor to go through it. But for those who are writing maybe more epic stories, what's on average a kind of, just to manage expectations there, you know, how long does it take to read through a manuscript and then make the comments on it for
an editor? So that's going to vary a little bit from editor to editor. But I would say a good rule of thumb is to expect at least 6 to 8 weeks for one round of editing. I usually take a little bit longer, but that's because I read through manuscripts twice before I send it back to the author. Just to make sure I've been as thorough as I possibly can. So like right now I have how many words is it? It's about 180,000 words. So it's definitely fits in the definition of epic. That one is going to, I'm doing a developmental edit, which is like story editing, you know, for plot and character arcs and all of that. That's going to take me about 12 weeks.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So be patient, those who are doing the epic stories.
Yeah, be patient. And I think also reframe it as an opportunity to either start working on a different draft, you know, if you have like a sequel that you want to start working on, or just to take some time for yourself and like go do something else that's fun, right? We all need a break. And, you know, while your book's with your editor, just, you know, go drink some coffee and watch TV and, you know, whatever you like to do.
Refilling your creative well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, go read another book, books by your favorite authors. It's a really good time to take a break.
Now, you mentioned it just before, but I wonder if you could let us know what services you do offer. You mentioned structural edits there.
Yep. So I do two different types of structural edits. There's the developmental edit, which is very like nitty gritty in the weeds. You know, kind of scene by scene, tiny little detailed edits. And then there's also a critique, which is very high level, big picture, That generally takes less time. It generally costs less money. So if you're on a budget, or if you've already had, you know, a few critique partners and beta readers go through your story, that's always a good option. And then there's also copy editing, which is, you know, grammar, spelling, punctuation. And there's also, so it's funny, depending on whose website you look at for different editors, they're going to have slightly different definitions for these. But there's also line editing, which is basically a very heavy copy edit. So I personally just combine the two into one service, because you always need a bit of both. It just depends on where you are in the story. You know, some paragraphs need more help than others. But some people might, you know, separate them, and that's also fine. And then I do proofreading, which is just, you know, cleaning up any final errors, slip through the cracks. Yeah.
A full service there.
Yeah, full service. Yep.
Well, now, one of the reasons I was super keen to chat to you is not only just to find out about your editing services, but I'd picked up on a blog post you'd written recently about writing emotional scenes. And this is something I know a lot of people are keen to understand more and improve upon, to help with the depth of their story, to help get in underneath the skin of their characters as well. So I guess I wanted to start off with the basics and ask you, why is it important to have those emotional scenes?
Yeah, it's something that every writer I've worked with either wants to work on that or needs to work on that. I think that's a universal experience. But, you know, think about, you know, books you read or movies you watch or TV shows you consume. Every story at its core is about some kind of human experience and the things that we go through in life. And we want to have that connection with at least one character, usually multiple characters. But we want to feel that with them and experience it with them and empathize with them. And maybe even learn something about ourselves along the way.
Yeah.
You do that with emotion.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. I can think about when I've kind of write my own, in my own very, when it gets towards the end and you've got the big kind of emotional scene, I tend to judge it on whether I make myself cry. If I'm able to make myself cry, then I'm thinking, okay, I'm on the right track here. This is going somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's a really good measure. And I always tell my clients, like when I'm reading their manuscripts, if there's a scene that really strikes me, I'm always like, oh, this was, you know, so good. It made me tear up, or, you know, laugh even, you know, it can always be a positive emotion as well.
Oh, that's music to a writer's ears, isn't it? Yeah. Now, are emotional scenes, are they appropriate to all stories, do you think? Because I was thinking about thrillers or like action adventure stories. Do they also need to have emotions as well?
I think they do. Think about, like, you know, the Marvel movies with like Captain America and everybody. Just because this was a show that my husband and I watched recently, but The Falcon and the Winter Soldier that came out on Disney Plus. That show was about overcoming trauma, accepting who you are, all kinds of things like that. And if that's not an emotional experience, I don't know what is. And you can have that as you go on these, you know, crazy epic adventures. I think it would be dishonest to say that people don't experience emotions on journeys like that. Mm-hmm. So I think they're appropriate no matter what. They might not always be some, you know, huge scene where everyone's crying and all of that, but, you know, we experience a gamut of emotions in our life, no matter what the scenario is.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So I wonder if you could talk our listeners through some of your kind of key tips for either writing the scene in the first place or managing to kind of delve down a few layers and give it that extra oomph.
Yeah. So one thing that I find pretty consistently is writers relying solely on body language when they're trying to convey emotion. And I think body language is very important because we do speak with our physical bodies and, you know, our posture and the things that we do. But I find that people either aren't thinking about going deeper than that, or they're afraid of too much narration, right? Because we're told show, don't tell so often. Mm-hmm. And this is where writing advice, you know, it's one of those things you have to take with a grain of salt. So if you're trying to show anxiety, for example, you might reference the butterflies in someone's stomach or their sweaty palms or their racing heart. And while those things are all great, without context of why they feel that way, they kind of just feel like flat and stagnant, right? So that's one thing that I always challenge writers to do, is beyond showing some body language and how they're feeling physically, delve into how they're feeling emotionally. And you can do that in two different main ways. The first would be just through straight narrative. You know, she couldn't believe that, you know, he said that to her. Or you can do that with like internal dialogue. You know, you often see that in italics and the she thought tag. But those are both different types of what's called interiority, which is basically just exploring the character's mind as you go through the story with them.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So don't rely solely on body language, but give that body language some context, and don't be afraid to do a little bit of telling in the context. Okay.
Yeah, I did. I wrote a blog post earlier this year about why show don't tell should actually be show and tell. Because, right, it's one of those things where if it's all imagery and all body language but zero context, people can't read between the lines too much. You have to give them a nugget here and there of those experiences and what your character's thinking and feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something I've slowly been realizing myself. I've been sort of focusing very much on the showing. And then when I went back to do a bit of book analysis, I was realizing, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, we need a bit of both of this. Yeah, there needs to be, I hadn't thought of it as concisely as you had, but yeah, I was realizing, yes, this needs to have, I need to guide my reader a little bit to keep them moving forward.
Exactly. And readers usually really appreciate getting that insight into the character's mind. You know, the internal journey is just as important as what's going on outside in the external world.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good tip. So what other tips do you have for us?
Oh, gosh. Let me think. So I would say, too, one thing that's important is making it as authentic as you can in the scene. So what I mean by that is usually it needs to be more nuanced than you might think. Like a character who's going to shout, you know, oh, woe is me. And they were sobbing and screaming and like all these like very heavy emotional words. That might be accurate in some situations. Like there are certainly situations where people have a very extreme emotional reaction. But a lot of the times when we're sad or when we're having hard conversations, think about how you react in real life or your friends or your family. And think about how subtle those emotions usually are. You know, it also is going to depend on, besides thinking about people you know in real life as like a model for just how that works, think about your character and if it's going to fit with them. If it's like very out of left field and very out of character personality, your readers are going to stop and they're going to go, that doesn't seem realistic from, you know, I've met them over these 50,000 previous words. And then all of a sudden they do this 180. That's going to draw your readers out of the story. And that is not what you want to do. Especially in emotional scenes, because you want to be experiencing it with them and not have to stop and figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I like that. And I know we hear a lot about not using cliche, but are there other times when actually a cliche will just fit the bill, that sometimes that's the only thing that will work?
Yeah, I say, like, if it's going to work, just go ahead and do it. It's the same advice people give on adverbs, right? Like, oh, you need to cut every adverb, or you need to cut every instance of the word that. You'll see that advice online a lot. But the one thing that I've learned with editing is there's always a gray area. There's never any absolute. So if your character gets a lump in their throat and they can't speak past it, is that kind of a cliche image? Sure, but it's also very relatable. Like that's happened to me many times in my life as an emotional person. So just use it if it's going to fit the bill. Don't be afraid of, you know, oh, this is too cliche or whatever. Just go for it. And you can always change it later if you decide to.
Yeah. Yeah, because I guess there's also, there's that other danger, and I know I've done this before when I've tried to be too clever, is then trying to think of something so original and out the box that it sounds just ridiculous.
Yep.
So I guess that's another thing to be just mindful of.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. You know, these things are well known for a reason. They're usually universal. I wouldn't use, you know, every single cliche bit of body language you can think of for a certain reaction. But if you want to use one, like, I think that's absolutely fine.
Cool. So we don't want to hit our readers on the head with too much emotion, like having them be out of control almost, but
yeah,
think about the nuance and how we can be a little bit more subtle, and I guess in that way it's so less can be more sometimes.
I think less can absolutely be more, and you can play with it too. You know, if a character responds less in a certain emotional scene, but in the scene after when they're alone, maybe that's when they actually react to what they just experienced, right? You're going to see the tension of, well, why didn't they really react to that in that scene? And then all of a sudden, like, oh, I see they wanted to be alone. You know, you'll probably need to provide some context for that. Or maybe it's part of their personality that they don't show emotion in front of others. Mm-hmm. There's all these different moving pieces with emotion and how you can play with it. So don't be afraid to take the emotion out of the scene where you think they would react and put it somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah. And okay. Making sure it fits with the character. And then we've learned too that sometimes it's okay to use a cliche, and then maybe the other extreme of that is don't be too outrageous with your similes or your analogies when you're trying to be different and come up with something original.
Yeah. That's another instance of you're going to pull the reader out of the story because they're going to be trying to figure out what exactly it is you want to say. You know, you don't want to make them pause too much.
No. Something I battle with a bit is when I'm writing dialogue in an emotional scene, how can I kind of convey that they might be frustrated, they might be angry, they might be upset, they might be frightened without using capital letters or exclamation points or saying he or she yelled? How can we convey those emotions without absolutely stipulating them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So one thing that I can think of is emphasis on a certain word, right? Like if you're in an argument with somebody, there might be an emphasis on a key word and you could italicize that. That could help. That clues the reader into like how the character is saying it. You kind of, you know, oh, okay, they really mean business now. Or I do think you mentioned using a verb like yelled. I think that's okay sometimes. You know, said and asked are typically the invisible dialogue tags. We kind of just skip over them and ignore them, which helps with your flow. But sometimes you need to clue readers into how someone is saying something, and there's no better way to do it sometimes than with a simple verb. Mm-hmm. So what I would say for that is, yes, it's okay sometimes, but if you go back and you're rereading a scene and you have like yelled, shouted, cried, exclaimed, replied all in a row, that's when you need to start cutting some of those out and think of different ways. So you might mix in then some body language to show their frustration in place of one of those verbs. Or in another place, maybe for exclaimed, you could use an exclamation mark then, and it wouldn't be overdoing it, but then you could cut explained. And it's about that nuance and that variation instead. I think they're all good tools. You just don't want to use them all at the same time or too repetitively.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. That's what, you know, it's okay to use those adverbs, but just not excessively. And
Yeah. Therefore
where you use them and kind of almost keeping them for emphasis, you know, to really hit home with a particular point.
Exactly. Yeah. Writing is all about balance. They're all valid tools. Except maybe all capital letters. That one's very hard on the reader's eyes, but otherwise they're all valid tools. You just want variation and see what flows the best. And I don't know if anyone on your show has ever mentioned this, but in Microsoft Word, you can actually have the computer read aloud to you. So if that's something that your listeners might be interested in, that I find as an editor, I use this all the time. You can then literally hear how the scene sounds. And of course it is a robotic voice. So it lacks a little bit of that emotion that an audiobook might, but you get the idea. You can hear the repetitiveness of certain things that your eye might stop catching after a while.
Yes. That's a good point. What a great tip. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that one. I mentioned earlier that I do two reads of every manuscript. On my second read, I always have the computer read stuff out loud to me because you can catch even more that way.
So whilst you're listening, are you reading it at the same time so that you're following, or you kind of eyes closed listening?
No, I follow along with the text. I read it as I listen. But yeah, that's something that many editors I know use, and I think it's a really good way to kind of check your own work.
Mm-hmm. I think I need to do that. That's a great one.
Yeah, or have someone else read it out loud to you if you're comfortable with that. That's another easy way.
You might have to pay them with chocolate cake afterwards.
But. Yeah, right.
So I wonder if you would have one last tip for our listeners before we kind of move on and find out a little bit more about your stories.
Yeah, I think one last thing that people should keep in mind when they want to include emotion in their story is there needs to be a buildup to it. Just having like adventure, 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 and then all of a sudden like this massive fight that the groundwork wasn't laid, the conflict bricks weren't laid for that path. You have to build up to it. That's how conflict works in real life most of the time. Everything in a story, you have to keep building up to each piece. So just, don't throw emotion in there because you heard this episode and thought, oh, I need an emotional scene. Make sure it fits with your story and what your characters are going through.
Okay. Oh, and so could an emotional scene like that, could that be one of either a story's turning points, like a pinch point in a story, or even perhaps one of the kind of obstacles that the character is overcoming?
Absolutely. And this is where, subplots can come in too, that one of the subplots might be some kind of conflict with another character, maybe their friend, maybe they're disagreeing on something. And at some point, something triggers that fight, and then they have to make a decision of where to go from there. Mm-hmm. That's how stories move forward, is there's always a conflict, a decision, and then their action on that decision. And then the cycle repeats itself. Mm-hmm. You can use an emotional scene for just about anything as long as it makes sense.
I like that. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much for that, Hannah. Some really good tips for our listeners there. I really appreciate that. I know it's part of the ongoing learning of the craft, isn't it? To get those emotions right.
Yeah. And just, keep practicing and have fun. And if it doesn't work out the first time, just revise the scene until you get it right.
Yes, that's what revision is for. Get that dirty first draft down and then you can revise.
Exactly.
So I want to loop back to the beginning of our conversation, which, because I don't think I realized this from reading about you, that you write your fiction in the evening. I only saw that you're about your editorial services. So I'd love it if you'd share with us a bit about what you write and where you're at in your writing career.
Sure. So I've self-published two nonfiction books for creative writers. One of them is called Productivity for Creative Writers, which is about, how you can be productive but find balance in your life, because I think that's very important. And then the other is like a prompted writer's notebook. Like, it has questions for, character development and all that good stuff. But for my fiction career, I've been kind of stuck for a while. I write, it's on the border of young adult, new adult fantasy. I know new adult is not really a thing in the traditional publishing world as it is in self-publishing. I'm working on a new adult fantasy story, hopefully a trilogy. That's the plan. And I wrote my first draft in like 3 months, all the way back in 2019 for NaNoWriMo. And then I just like fell off the horse with everything that happened in 2020. But I'm recently getting back into it. I have an accountability partner and one of my editor friends. She and I are both fiction writers by night. So we write together and, you know, we read each other's stuff. So that's very helpful. And I'm already about 20,000 words in, and I just started working on that this month. So
gosh, we're only at the beginning of the month.
Oh no, sorry. It's May now, at the beginning of April. I always forget what day it is now, but yeah, so I started that at the beginning of April of 2021, and I'm hoping to have a polished draft by maybe the end of the year or early next year.
Ah, and so do you find giving yourself a deadline? Do you like to do that for your fiction work, or do you prefer to take it just a bit more easy with your fiction work?
I do like a deadline, but I kind of view it as a flexible deadline. I'm very type A. So it's very helpful for me to have that. But I also know that there's not really any pressure besides what I'm putting on myself. So I think it's helpful for my own flow of writing. But if something happens, or, you know, if I got sick for a week, it wouldn't be the end of the world. That's how I view my personal deadlines.
Yeah. Yay. Well, good luck with that. I hope that
thank you.
When it's finished and out in the world, let me know and I can share about it.
Oh, that would be awesome. Thank you.
But I want to just ask you about, you brought up such an interesting point about what's in the traditional world and what's not in the traditional world. So you mentioned there that young adult and new adult. So young adult is well established now. New adult, you mentioned, not so much, particularly within the traditional world. Can you differentiate for me what young adult is and new adult is?
Sure. So young adult could be anywhere from around like 14 to 18 years old, usually for both the main characters and the ideal audience of that author. You know, think about late middle school, early high school, that right before college and adulthood point is young adult. And that deals with a lot of, you know, coming of age stories, finding some of your own power, figuring out who you are. New adult is very similar, but the characters age up just a bit. So you might think, you know, like 19 through 25. And these are very rough numbers. No one has like a set definition. But then the story, think about like when you maybe left, you know, college or any continuing education you did, what that felt like and the problems you were going through. Some of it might be, who are you as you enter adult society, because that's very different than when you left high school. You know, interpersonal relationships, romantic or otherwise, those are usually big themes. It's just, it's a very similar to young adult, but just age it up and age the problems up a little bit.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm realizing I've written a couple of new adult books then without realizing it. They never made it to the finished, but part of my practice manuscripts.
Yeah, and the traditional world pretty much categorizes those as adult, or if they're like 19, 20, they might call them young adult. But in the self-publishing world, there is actually a pretty big readership for new adult age books, especially I find in fantasy. That's something people are looking for. So to anyone out there who's writing new adult fantasy, you might want to consider self-publishing for a pretty wide audience.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, like a bonus tip there. We're not only about the reading, but the, you know, the computer reading to us, but what's on hot on the market at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, Hannah, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. Before we say goodbye, though, I'd love for you to let listeners know where they can find out more about your editing services.
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram at BTL Editorial. And then my website is also btleditorial.com.
Fantastic. I'll be sure to link to those. And I'll also link to your books as well, should anybody want to, your nonfiction book, should anybody want
awesome.
To get on that.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed our chat. Thank you very much.
Yeah, have a good day.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found that helpful and inspirational. Now, don't forget to come on over to Facebook and join my group, Turning Readers into Writers. It is especially for you if you are a beginner writer who is looking to write their first novel.
If you join the group, you will also find a free cheat sheet there called 3 Secret Hacks to Write with Consistency. So go to emmadesi.com/turningreadersintowriters, hit join. Can't wait to see you in there. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.